Hey there, everybody. Phil here. Now, real quick, before we start this podcast, I want you to go to androidcentral.com/Huawei. If you're in the U.S., you can enter to take part in their Huawei-friendly user testing program. We've got 10 invites. It's going to let you review their next flagship phone, probably right alongside us, before you can even buy it. This is going to be really cool. It's really easy to enter. It's the Huawei-friendly user testing program. We've got 10 invites. androidcentral.com/Huawei. Go enter now. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 228 for Friday, March 20th, 2015. How goes it? I'm Phil
Dickinson. Yay!
Were you applauding the fact that I knew my name?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. It's been one of those days. How do my eyes look a little tired on that video, don't they? Like I was up all night writing. Just a little. For those of you listening at home, this is my tired voice. So I'm Phil Dickinson. I run Android Central with these yahoos down below, Russell Holly.
Hello.
How are you, Russell?
I'm great. It's been
a good
week.
You've had a fun week printing things. And
I have had such a fun week printing things.
It's fun for me to watch you guys have fun. Not all at once, though. Just one at a time. If more than one of you has fun one time, I can't handle that.
Too much fun happening.
It means I'm not doing my job right. Jerry Hildenbrand, how are you?
I'm having no fun, but I'm here.
Then my job here is done.
Yeah. I'm going to have fun.
The fun part about when Jerry has fun is he still wants to complain about it a little bit. Like, dude's tooling around Google I.O. last year, and I know he's, you know, a pig in slop. And just, it's fun to watch him in that environment a little bit. Because he's around his people. He's around his nerds and people who understand stuff that I can't even get anywhere near. And Jerry, so he comes out of me, he's just like, I have so much to write. And he doesn't know where to start. It's so cute. It's my favorite week of the year.
It gets overwhelming.
It does. It absolutely does. And it gets overwhelming for you and you know.
And it's a good overwhelming.
Yeah. Totally. Alex Doby is here as well and being very patient.
Hey, everyone. I think I'm next on the fun quota. I'm going to claim that place.
All right. Fair enough. Well, Andrew is gone again. Talk about some kid having fun. I think he's back in Paris today or something. So.
From all of us, have fun, friends.
For all of us, screw you.
when you get back, it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, I already warned him. I was like, dude, we got stuff for you to do. So, oh, man, where do you guys want to start this week? We got a lot. I mean, for as like, exhausted as I kind of am today, we've got a lot going on. And I don't know. Where do you want to start? We were just talking about where we want to start. So.
I'm actually mildly annoyed that you're not hosting this podcast from your car.
I'm trying to think if I could do. I mean, I could totally do that. I'm right outside my office. Is my car in the parking lot of death? For those of you who have followed that ordeal, and actually, so I was sitting down there earlier using a phone that doesn't even have a SIM card in it just to play with it. So yes, I got Android Auto. I broke down and did it. Spent a lot of money, guys. These things are not cheap. Let's talk about that. The first Pioneer units are available, and I think all three are available, actually. I got the cheap one. I'm doing air quotes if you're watching the video. $700 for the cheap one. So here's what I did. I had it installed at Best Buy. I just, you know, me, I'm tired. Again, look at the eyes. So I went to Best Buy. I said, just sell me this. Let's just do it all here, whatever. And actually, I've used them for installs before for other stereos. Perfectly happy with them. So all said and done, it was close to $1,100 for, you know, $700 for the radio plus a few parts plus, you know, it's like $64 for installation and tax. And so it adds up pretty quick. That is not a cheap purchase. Don't make any mistake about that. But Russell, you've been looking around. I mean, $700 for a head unit like this is not unreasonable, right?
No, not even a little bit. And it's going to be weird to have this conversation over the next little while because $700 is what we spend for our entire phones in most cases. And so when we're talking about these head units, it's, you know, you're not just buying Android Auto. Like you're buying an entire functioning head unit, and the features that come along with that are kind of, you know, non-trivial. So, you know, the ability to connect rear-mounted cameras and the ability to support a bunch of different stereos and Bluetooth support and stuff like that. And when you take Android Auto and Apple CarPlay out of the equation entirely and you head to sites like Crutchfield and you look for that same level of features with a double-din stereo setup and you know a decent touchscreen, the low end is $700. So you're looking at, you know, pretty reasonable prices for the features that are there, and you get Android Auto and CarPlay.
A lot of money.
It is. And, you know, car stereos are expensive. I mean, yeah. We're going to see some of these are going to get released for $2,000, you know, that are going to support a lot more in the way of features. The screens are going to be even nicer. Some of them are going to have, you know, the rear cameras built into the bundles that you buy. There's car stereos are not cheap, and the you know $200 double din stereo that you buy that has, you know, a kind of a janky Bluetooth connection and the worst user interface on the planet that you're going to see on Crutchfield, not even close to what Pioneer packaged in this Android Auto bundle.
Oh, and I forgot, I had to get a new satellite thing too, so that was like another $100 or whatever, so that added to it. Yeah, and the big question I think we're going to have to ask and answer, and part of me wants to try to answer it right now, but I need to, you know, wait longer than 24 hours, is it worth it? What can you do that's cheaper and relatively the same, and is what you get in Android Auto right this second today, is that worth it?
I mean, don't forget we're in the early adopter phase, like we'll be with any kind of technology. Right. So maybe folks are willing to charge a little bit more for something that has, you know, CarPlay and Android Auto. They're marketing it to the kind of people that would pay a little bit more to have those features, the same way that you would have, you know, with early smartwatches, early tablets, that kind of product.
Well, but moreover, these cannot be devices that are just dead in a year. Like a phone could be, or
right. And it's not. Yeah, the phone or tablet comparison isn't really fair because it is, as much as it is a functional head unit in itself. The Android Auto and the CarPlay stuff that it does is all controlled by your phone, so it is effectively like a dumb terminal for your phone in that sense. But all the smart stuff happens on your device, so it probably isn't going to be a case that, you know, here's something that you upgrade every year. Like, you know, manufacturers would like you to upgrade your phone every year, your tablet every year, or now your watch every year. That's not going to be the case.
It absolutely can't. We also kind of have to separate the conversation a little bit between the head unit itself and what's going on there, and then Android Auto, the service, for lack of a better term.
That's where I'm interested. I love music. I would spend $1,100 on the right head unit, but what's right for me is the way it sounds, the way it integrates with other features in my car. I want Android Auto and or AirPlay, get out of the way and let me have good sound. So that's something that we can't just forget.
And do we know yet how that's going to work? Have we tried play music through that? Is the equalizer is that controlled by the phone? Is that just a case of it being dumb Bluetooth audio and that the stuff that controls the way it sounds is still controlled by your device?
I don't know.
Well, it's not Bluetooth audio.
I'm assuming it's not Bluetooth. See, there's this. I need to. And remember, 24 hours in here, guys. I'm learning right along with everybody else. We've got a forum thread going on all this too. Here's what you do. There's an Android Auto app on your phone. And actually, before I get into that, if you don't listen to the Android Developers Backstage podcast, you absolutely need to. A lot of it's kind of over my head. You know, developer type stuff. As the name says, Tor Nyby and Chad Haas from Google. They had a really good one this week. It just came out today with, let me get the name right, Gabriel Peel from Android Auto, that explains a lot of this kind of back stuff. So even I was listening to it right before this pod, you know, right before we started recording this, so that helped a lot. Really, the head unit is just a dumb screen. And everything is being handled on your phone. And what's more is that everything's actually being handled through the Android Auto app, through that one APK. And then right now, the only apps you really have are Google Maps, Pocket Casts, and TuneIn Radio, and Google Play Music. But everything is kind of getting filtered through the Android Auto APK. So like Pocket Casts, there's not a Pocket Casts Auto app, right? It's just saying, okay, take this music and route it through Android Auto. Android Auto is going to tell it how to look on the screen, blah, blah, blah. We're just feeding it this information. Here's the podcast you want to listen to. You know, when you hit the play button, it's Android Auto doing it. So it was really interesting hearing that discussion, but I still have questions that I'm trying to figure out. So, like, you plug it in, but Bluetooth is connected as well. And I'm 99% sure that's for phone calls and not music.
Yeah, it has to be phone calls and not music. And the reason we weren't sure about that before that podcast, but when they were talking about it on the podcast, that was when they didn't flat out say that it wasn't Bluetooth, but the way that they described multiple audio functions. So one of the really cool things that I didn't even know about until listening to that podcast is if you are listening to music and you have Google Nav giving directions, then it will play the next set of instructions for turn-by-turn directions louder on the driver left side speaker than it will anywhere else, so that the other people listening to music aren't as interrupted. That can't happen over Bluetooth.
Gotcha.
That kind of channel split up, it's either stereo or mono. It's not gonna direction across the four different channels, and that's something that the stereo itself has to be able to handle. And so that's the head unit through USB is how that's happening.
It was a really seamless process. I mean, it took all of 30 seconds to get it up and running. And this was with me being completely unfamiliar with this head unit. Really, it's you plug in and go. And there are two USB sources. So I've just got I forget which end is which. I'll just call it the big end of USB. that's what I plug in, right? So I just take a normal USB cable, micro USB, plug it into my car now, and it says, all right, I see Android Auto, and it launches automatically. I haven't tried CarPlay yet. I need to. We'll talk about that more later, or I'll talk with the iMore guys about it. And then the app fires up, and it makes you click through some warning stuff, and then you're in there. Then you're going. So it's very much separate from the rest of the head unit UI. And, man, I mean, if you listen to the podcast we did with Sam Abelsamid a few weeks ago, and I asked him why UI sucks so bad. This Pioneer one's not great either. there are parts of it that are okay and parts of it that just make me want to bang my head against the glass of my car. But Google's is pretty good. Remember how we were worried about the list views? That's not bugging me as much as I thought it would.
Even with that resistive display?
Yeah. I mean, look, a resistive display is not good, and part of me still hates myself for spending so much money on something that has a resistive display. And I get that people are, they look at it and they immediately see a spec like that, and they're just like, no. But cars are different than tablets. They just are.
I would not want a capacitive display on something that I'm not focusing on when I'm touching it.
Tell me why.
Because if there's a button there for me to press play or pause while I'm driving, number one, I shouldn't be looking at it at all.
Right.
Number two, I don't want to accidentally touch wrong buttons and do something and take even more focus away from the road to fix what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Let me press hard.
Exactly. And that's why I think I'm okay with it so far. And again, it's still way early, so I'm still learning it. Maps is Maps. Pretty familiar. My biggest concern about Maps is a lot of the buttons are, and I need to share some screenshots, are on the right-hand side of the UI, which, is as far away from me as it can be.
You shouldn't be touching them.
Yeah, you think so? Okay.
You have no business touching them.
That's totally why that's set up like that.
Right. Let the passenger touch them, or you pull over and touch them.
Right. There's two options. You push those buttons before you turn, or before the car goes anywhere, or the passenger goes and handles. And that's perfect for, you're driving somewhere unfamiliar and you want to know where the next gas station is or something like that. The passenger should be pushing those buttons.
Right. Fair enough.
And if you don't have a passenger, then don't push those buttons until you're safe.
If you ride with Phil, you have to do all the work.
Yeah. All right, fine. I'm outvoted on that. Otherwise, it's pretty simple. I'm trying to think back to it because I haven't used it a whole lot. I mean, here's my problem. I don't need navigation where I live. I know where I am. I know where I'm going. It's not that big a town. So I'm really curious to hear from people who use navigation a lot and see how it works out for them. I'm kind of not crazy about things being not hidden, but, I mean, you've got a drawer and sort of an overflow menu thing. I'm totally mixing UI metaphors, I know. But there's a lot of that going on. Which, again, okay, maybe to keep you from hitting buttons. Maybe it should be hidden.
I don't know. I was concerned about Google Glass and Android Wear in the car.
Mm-hmm.
This just sounds like a nightmare that I'm not ever going to be able to sleep at night.
There are a lot of things to push. And look, that's not just Android Auto. There's a lot of stuff on its head unit to push anyway. It does have physical buttons on it. So, and for me, that's always a good thing because you can just reach up and feel. I like that. My old one was a single DIN unit, so it didn't have touchscreen or anything, but it did have a remote, and I used the remote all the time. Oh, and speaking of remotes, I think I shared a picture on Twitter. The remote for this thing just sucks. It's embarrassingly bad. I don't think I'm ever going to use it, which is a shame because I like using remotes for that stuff. What else? Pocket Cast is really good. So, you know, again, because it's using it on your phone, you don't have to sign in again or anything. All your podcasts you listen to are just right there. That's cool. TuneIn Radio, I need to mess around with some more. I don't use it a whole lot. And when I did use it, it was mainly to listen to local radio, like when I was away or something. So I'll have to play with that some more. Google Play Music is decent. You don't have like album lists or artist lists or anything, but okay, I get it. That keeps you from staring at the thing and scrolling. So I guess it wants you to use voice more, which is a good thing. But at the same time, I'm like,
That's some kind of paradigm that we got on Android Wear right now, where it's kind of difficult to do anything through touch. You got a bunch of layers of menus to go through, but it is quite simple if you're into talking to your watch. I guess less of a big deal in your car, right, to use voice controls.
Yeah, exactly. Latency is... I can't tell if it's a phone thing. I have a feeling it's a phone thing. I bet if I start with a fresh phone, because I was using my M8, and it was, you know, it's... I've done a lot of stuff with that M8, so it's getting up there and probably needs a flash, but I don't want to... I don't want to deal with the Android music thing and just... Sorry, don't want to go down that road again.
But it was also slow in the demo, and that was something that really kind of put me off at Google I.O. last year when they first showed this thing off. They rolled out that half a car, and they had someone climb in and do stuff, and it bummed me out how slow it was when he was switching around for menu animations. And, you know, I didn't put a whole lot of weight behind it because it was a demo on stage of a product that didn't exist for another half a year.
And it's still way early.
Yeah, and so, you know, it certainly, you know, could be one way or the other, but it, you know, this is never going to be faster than the latency that you get when you use a Chromecast mirror.
Yeah.
Because it's using a lot of the same underlying technology. So, you know, if you want an idea for how fast Android Auto is going to be, you know, Chromecast mirror to your television and, you know, flip back and forth for a little while. It will never be faster than that.
I hate to use the word never because we're on a cable. Maybe they can make it faster, but I would not count on it.
Right.
My question is whether Google Play Music is going to be worth using in that form, or should I just Bluetooth the damn thing in there?
Well, Bluetooth audio sucks. I mean,
it sounded pretty good to me when I tried.
Well, sucks was a harsh word. I can tell. I can tell if something is streaming over Bluetooth or it's playing natively. But I really like to listen to my music, so maybe I'm just the odd person out.
Look, and I'm in a Honda. The thing's loud anyway. So there's a lot of road noise there.
You have power issues and everything else when you're using Bluetooth. If you can just play it through the unit, do that.
Yeah. Look, I don't want anyone to, I can't say it enough, 24 hours into this thing, I'm still really excited about it. And I'm really excited about the potential for it. And I thought they did a good point of explaining that in the podcast, Gabriel did. What is that?
My heater.
Oh.
It snowed here today, so.
Ooh,
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's still snowing here. I'm going to choke someone.
First day of spring. Thanks, nature.
79 here.
And you're the person I want to choke.
What was I saying? When you get Android Auto, you're going to be getting updates for the next, you know, 5-10 years because of the way cars work and because they know they have to support things that long and keep up with it, and that that's just the way it's going to have to be done. So any qualms I have right now, I kind of have to shove aside a little bit because it's going to be around for a long time.
Well, you know what I'm most excited about is before Android Auto, if you wanted Android into your dash in your built-in unit, you had to buy a couple not very high quality but pretty expensive devices, and I won't name any companies. Android Auto lets a company like Pile. Now I will name a company. They make decent stuff at low price. I can see a $199 Android Auto head unit you can buy at Walmart and install yourself, and boom, now you have a computer in your car.
I thought one of the interesting things, and Jerry said they mentioned this at I.O. last year, is they can recognize when your car already has GPS built into it and then shut off the GPS on your phone. And I'm not sure if that's in there now or if that's upcoming or whatever. I mean, obviously, they said it before, so I guess they could do it now, you know, just to save on battery. I'm also curious about the charging, because your phone is charging while it's plugged in, but it looks a little silly right now because right next to it I have this quick charging charger. So I'm assuming this head unit doesn't do quick charge. So,
well, and that's, you know, we've got a couple other interesting things to keep in mind as we move forward with this stuff, because, you know, we're at a weird cross-section with some other stuff. You know, we're, over the next couple of years, we're going to see things like USB-C and, we're already seeing, you know, faster USB connections. Faster USB connections is going to mean faster streams for Android Auto, you know, higher performance stuff. So as first generation tech goes, this is really cool stuff, but it's also first generation tech that is on the cusp of a lot of changes as far as how our hardware gets treated. So there's a lot of stuff to keep in mind.
And we're talking about the speed of the interface there. And what's the limit for USB-C? It's something like 10 gigabits per second. So yeah. Imagine how fast you could get with a proper USB-C head unit. And I'm sure if you have one that's based on the old, you know, traditional micro USB, and eventually phones move to the new format, you'll just get an adapter plug-in, it'll work just fine because it's just USB. But yeah, you got to imagine that further down the line, maybe a few generations time, you're going to have something that feels a lot faster just because there's more bandwidth to go around.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be spending $1,000 in 5 years, aren't I?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I'll probably have a new car by then anyway. Oh man. It's exciting. I saw some good questions in the Q&A actually. Jean-Paul, where'd it go? I saw it. There it is. Does Android Auto support multiple phones? Like, if my wife borrows my car, can her Android phone access my Android Auto? Yes, because it's not your Android Auto.
Right. I mean, it's whatever you plug in.
Right.
Think of it like a monitor for your computer.
That's all it is, yeah. So it's whatever is on the phone. That's nice. That's cool. That's a very good way to do it.
Yes, I think that was the smart way, both from Google and Apple, to do this sort of thing. That way you don't have users and complications. You just plug it in and go.
Here's another good one from Andrew. Is there a significant difference between the experience with Android Auto and using an Android phone mounted on your dash connected via Bluetooth and the like? Yeah, there's a lot of it has to do with distractions, right? I mean, with the phone, you're getting everything pumped in. I mean, there are car modes, I guess. So if you're using car mode, that's different. But
I was actually going to talk to you about spending a few $100 and revisiting that. Since they don't make a head unit that fits in my car, I want to mount one of these phones I have laying around here permanently in my car.
Well, why would you want to do it permanently versus...
Well, a permanent mounting fixture that I can slip a phone into.
We sell many portable ones.
Well, okay, but something to keep it in place,
right,
and stable, and see just how useful it really is compared to what you're seeing with an in-dash product.
Yeah, no, totally. And I used to use them more. Was it the M7? I think the M7 I had in the car a lot, and the GS3 I did as well, and actually had proper car kits. Yeah, I mean, notifications are going to be one big difference. They're very, you know, strongly controlling what comes through Android Auto and what you can see. I'm not crazy about seeing notifications drop down. I think that's a little scary. I don't mind getting, you know, audio alerts, and it's kind of cool having your text spread out to you until, you know, my wife decides to send me something I don't want the kids to hear, I guess, which never happens. But, you know, it's visually, I'm not crazy about it. I mean, the touch points are way different, and definitely, you know, thought out differently for an automotive perspective. But, again, the big question is going to be, all right, is it just easier to start on Bluetooth and stream it and be done with it? Or I don't know. We're going to have to answer those things, I think. That's
well, I mean, it's definitely easier, but whether or not it's better is entirely... Right.
Exactly. Kevin asks, will the relatively low Android 5.0 numbers affect the uptake of Android Auto, or are the two still so new that the lower numbers won't matter for some time? Do you think Google will release a version that will work before 4 and lower so many more can upgrade to Android Auto?
No on the last part.
No, yeah. This is going to be 5.0 and up, and it has to be.
Yeah, it requires way too many new APIs that it's just never going to get ported back.
I think we're kind of looking at this a little too much like we would a typical smartphone or tablet product versus an automotive thing, which is just totally different and outside the realm of what we normally deal with and understand.
Yeah, and the time frames involved are so much longer anyway. We're at the very, very, very beginning right now.
Yeah.
And by the time adoption rates do pick up, if they ever do, you're going to have Android 5.0 on 75% of the phones. I hate to say it, but it's going to take that long.
Well, and I mean, you know, we're dealing with the speed of automotive technology. I mean, this is why Android Auto is built the way that it is. It's built to be an enduring product because it has to be, because automotive tech does not move at the pace that any other technology does. And that's both a good thing and an obnoxious thing. And it's just something that has to be accepted for a while.
I'm totally going to screw up this name, but it's a really good question, so it's almost worth it. And I'm going to try it. Kilamis? I hope I got close. I'm sorry. Is the new USB-C compatible with current USB through some dongle? So that's a good question. If I end up, say, later this year, early next year, I have a USB-C phone with, you know, I don't have a cable sitting here. Here I do. Somewhere. Oh, wow, that's a Pebble charging plug. Why is that even on my desk? All right, so that won't help. Say this end is micro USB. Pretend it's not a Pebble. USB-C, right? This end plugs into my car like normal. Is this going to be the bottleneck, you know, from where it pokes out of my car to the head unit? Is that going to be slower than this brand new USB-C cable? Okay.
Yes. But that doesn't mean it can't be used. It's just not going to be able to be used at full speed.
That was
It'll work just as well as it would have with a phone that was micro USB.
Right. Well, it's just like using a mini to micro USB adapter if you've got an old BlackBerry charger. The exact same thing. It just converts it and makes it work.
That was a really bad analogy on my part, by the way. So
the Pebble charger didn't really
help. No. That was fine. Don't be so hard on yourself.
Okay. We love you here. Yeah, the Pebble cable didn't help things any. Welcome to my desk. Yeah, so I mean, it'll be interesting to see how much they can just speed up on the software side versus the actual bandwidth, right? Like, how much do you actually need for that 480x800 display? And by the way, the resolution, and they touched on it on the podcast as well, and I completely agree. The resolution does not bother me one bit at all.
Nope.
Well, I mean, can you watch movies on that thing?
Yes. Actually, you can.
I had no idea if there were any things in place that you can actually watch.
This thing, it's a DVD player, actually.
Okay.
And also does DivX. There's an SD card slot.
But that's not part of Android Auto watching. No apps.
No, it's Pioneer stuff.
Yeah, no, they're very, and they mentioned that. They're like, yeah, look, we are reviewing every app that's going to be submitted with Android Auto APIs in it, and take a look at what you're doing. And if you're trying to put like a video player in there, we're probably not going to let you. So, let's see. Could Google install Wi-Fi Direct into the Android Auto standard to remove the need for the cable? That's an interesting question.
But would you want them to?
Mm-mm. No, with my limited use of Wi-Fi Direct, I can absolutely say no, I would not.
I mean, there are a few issues there. One is your phone isn't charging while you're doing that, so potentially your phone runs out of power and then your head unit dies, and then just the general jank involved with Wi-Fi Direct, right, like Phil was saying.
Yeah.
I just, when you're transmitting that much information from one device to another, it's hard to beat a cable.
Here's a good one from Jeffrey. Gents, I see that gents should button my top button now. I see this is the first dabble by Google to a glass dashboard similar to Garmin's glass cockpit used in high-end aircraft. Could Android Auto be expanded to cover all the car systems, or is it outside of its purpose? They talked about that a little bit on the podcast as well. I mean, it's all about the integration, right? And there's no reason it couldn't.
I believe Garmin makes a projector you put your Android phone into, and it has a heads-up display on your car window right now. Now, that's not at all outside the realm of possibility, and I would love to see it. And dibs on the review if they ever make one.
And, you know, I mean, what my kids are going to have in 8 and 10 years is going to be totally different than what we have now. Oh, man. Jean-Paul asks, isn't the rumor that next year Android M will run completely in Kardashian and not require a connection to the phone? Possible, yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a complete backtrack from what they've very purposefully set up with the way it works right now, where it all runs off the phone, and you know it's all controlled from there, so they can very easily update it through Play services. That it would seem like a step backwards if that happened to me.
I could see some sort of fork, you know, embedded Android for automotive purposes. Why not? You know, is it going to be controlled by Google? That's the question.
But what's the advantage of doing that in the head unit itself versus doing it in the phone and then, you know, piping the input and the video like they're doing now over a fast connection? There doesn't really seem to be any benefit there for me.
You wind up with like an Android Wear style setup if they were to do something embedded, where, you know, the amount of processing power that gets offloaded to the secondary device is so minimal that it wouldn't matter.
Mm. All I know is if they do it and you think $800 is expensive now.
Mike wants to know, Google Play Music on Android Auto, can you thumb up a song? I think you can. I need to go back and look.
Oh, I love that question.
I think you can, though.
That's something I would have thought of in the middle of the night and said, hey, Phil!
Quick, run out to your car.
Corey wants to know, is Android Auto the start of a Tesla-like experience for drivers, or do you suspect it might end at audio, GPS, and custom apps? Look, I mean, there ain't nothing in my 2005 Honda Civic with two car seats in the back that feels like a Tesla experience, I'll tell you that. Android Auto or not. But that's not what he was asking, I know.
The Tesla experience is a 17-inch monitor with, you know, multi-touch setup and its own embedded operating system. It is a deeply complicated system because it's an operating system that controls the entire vehicle. So it's hard to compare the two.
Every car has a brain, an electronic brain. Every car made in the past, let's say, 10 years. They all have maybe not just one master operating system, but your car you have now is already computer controlled without an interface for you to see what's happening or tell it to change something unless you plug something into a port under your steering wheel, and then you have complete control over a lot of that stuff. That technology already exists. I don't know why the people at Tesla think that it's useful information that has to be there, and the people at, let's say, General Motors don't think it's useful information and has to be there. You know, I imagine somewhere in the middle is the right point, and we would all love to see some more things, and I don't want to say it will happen, but it certainly could happen with Android Auto. The interfaces and sensors are there already.
I think that's all I got for that right this second.
But I want it. I want to be able to... I want to be like Knight Rider and talk to the car. I ain't even going to lie. I just want to lean back and say things to it, and then it answers me in a chirpy little voice.
That was a concern I had because, you know, Hondas have a lot of road noise. There's a microphone that dude mounted in the dash. And it seems like it hears me pretty well. Again, 24 hours of use. I'm just trying to get the timing down right. Because, like, I push the button, and then it's almost like I have to wait a little longer than I think I do after it makes the little doo-doo sound that we're used to.
You're waiting for S voice. Oh, wait, no, never
mind. Stop. So we'll see. I got to figure out how we want to write about all this, and we got a lot of questions. And I want to try CarPlay, too. I'm really curious about that because I haven't used that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest. The thought of an old 170-gigabyte iPod with high-quality music files directly plugged into my car radio with USB actually piques my interest a little more than Google Play Music on my car stereo. I'm sorry, but it does.
Well, CarPlay is just iOS 8 and up.
Oh.
Sorry.
God. I thought it was backwards compatible with all the old iPod interfaces.
No.
My heart is broken.
My job here is done. All right, so that's enough teasing with Android Auto. I'm sure I will talk about it way too much in the future, so don't worry about that. HTC has had some pretty big news in the past 24 hours, to say nothing of everything else going on. Alex, what the hell happened to Peter Chow?
Well, Peter Chow has stepped down as CEO. He's still around at HTC. He's taking on more of a product-focused role. I mean, he's always been a product guy, if you've ever spoken to him or heard stories about him or spoken to anyone who has spoken to him. I think what the exact title of what he's going to be doing is, it's something involved with the development of future products, which has always been something that he's been keenly involved in. So, you know, anything like that with a company like HTC, changing CEO, changing the guy at the top is always a big deal. Xiao Wang, the chairman, is taking over, and she was taking over some of the CEO duties from him anyway late last year, so it's been kind of a gradual process anyway. The impression that you get is maybe this is more of like an official title changeover, whereas the actual transition, the way HTC works, has been in progress for a while now. So, Xiao Wang, who is, by all accounts, a very, very successful businesswoman, is going to be taking over the CEO duties wholesale now. Peter Chow is going to be focusing on future products, which, of course, means smartphones. It means all the other stuff they're working on, like the Ree camera, the Grip Band, and, of course, the Vive VR stuff as well.
I think, and I think that's important to remember, is we continue to talk about HTC being more than a smartphone manufacturer, and it's still way early in that process, too.
Exactly, yeah, and as they move into different categories, they need someone to be focused on that constantly, to be aware of all the developments that are going on with the VR stuff. They have a lot of fingers and a lot of pies now between the wearables, the move into tablets, which we've only seen one so far, the Nexus, but I'm pretty sure if they're doing Nexus tablets, they're going to be investigating other areas where they can do that. And of course, the completely new crazy stuff that everyone's getting excited about with VR as well, and who knows what else they're planning.
Well, I think it's probably a really good thing to move somebody that already knows into that position rather than try to find somebody else to head up all the new stuff Alex is talking about. I think this is a good thing.
Yeah, and the implication was, look, we all know where HTC was in 2011, and we all know where they mm-hmm. are now, right? And there's been the suggestion that Peter Chow, being in charge, has to a certain extent, take responsibility for what is effectively a decline of HTC. There's no other way of putting it.
Right.
But I think that's one side of it. The other side of it is positioning him into a place where he is best suited, right? He's a product guy, first and foremost, more than, essentially a manager or a business person. Xiao Wang is much more of a business person than a product person. So it's these two getting into the positions where they are doing things that they're best suited to, it would seem.
People change jobs a lot, even at the exact level. I don't know. And it's probably somewhere in between the, oh my God, he got demoted, and then the, this is perfect, it's great for him talk,
The extent to which he did get demoted, I think that's debatable, right? He still answers to Xiao Wang like he did before. He's just going to be focusing much more on product stuff now. So.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I always hate to second guess stuff like this because this could be the best thing that ever happened.
Yeah, like we are so far removed from any sort of. I mean, it's been the same thing when operator execs change jobs and move around, and Google execs change jobs, and like I have no idea what's going on there. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be really interesting. And we were talking about, internally, we were talking a lot about the HTC Ree camera today. And by the way, it's on sale at Best Buy for like $99, or somebody said $75 if you get a refurb or open box.
Yep.
The more I use this little thing, and I've got mine just sitting here at my desk today. Here, take a picture of the podcast. The more I use it, the more I like it. I know Alex is still kind of lukewarm. Jerry, I think, is getting a little excited about it. But
I mean, I'm lukewarm on the product. I'm not lukewarm on the idea. I think there is a good idea here, just waiting for a really good execution, maybe the next version of it.
Yeah, and even if the first one doesn't hit it, fine. The HTC Vive, the VR stuff, I'm still blown away by it. And again, it's the first time I've tried anything like that. But wow. That's pretty much anything anyone has said once they've tried it. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there. I don't have the answer. I don't know if it's going to work or not. Find out with the rest of you. Jerry knows. Ask Jerry.
I don't know anything except that little recamera's waterproof, so me and it are going fishing when the weather warms up.
It is. M9. So what did we learn? Jason McKenzie, VP of the Americas. Always love that, the Americas. this week said April 10th is when we should start seeing. Was it pre-orders or actual sales? I forget which.
Available at retail on the 10th, and that is the same day we have for global availability. The S6. We don't know about US yet.
We the comments were getting crazy in that post. I mean, we haven't had any availability announcements from the carriers, and so I mean, you have to wait on the carriers for those. But HTC is one of the few companies, like Motorola, that does it right and actually sells the phones unlocked on their own, and so I would expect to see that then no later.
I would guess at least one carrier and also unlocked sales on the 10th.
So, you know, chill a little bit, I guess. There was a good question in the Q&As here. Where'd it go about it? No, that wasn't it. That wasn't it. That wasn't it. That wasn't it. Maybe it was something else. Maybe I'm making it up. I don't know. Yeah, no, I think that's the right way. I really want Samsung to sell phones like that, by the way.
And it's weird that I think the US is the only market that they don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, say what you like about the carrier system over there, but it would seem trivial for a manufacturer like Samsung when HTC's doing it, when Motorola's doing it, to just say, okay, they're already making developer editions for Verizon for certain phones. It's got to be, a very small endeavor for them to just say, okay, we're going to release an unlocked version, and like other countries, the unlocked version gets updates first because we don't have to go through carriers.
What do you think about this new uh-oh thing, other than it being kind of a silly name? It doesn't necessarily replace the HTC Advantage thing, and they really just kind of renamed it. But for 1 year after you buy the M9, if you break it, they will send you a new one.
They will overnight you a new one while they wait to send the old one back, which is kind of a big deal, I think.
That's pretty awesome. And if you don't break it, you know, you're not out anything. Well, you're not out. They're going to give you $100 toward the purchase of whatever their next phone is.
That was the big deal for me. The last time, it was really cool that they'll fix your phone if you screw up and break it. But now you're rewarded even if you don't break it.
Sure, and this isn't a trade-in thing. We want to make that clear. Yep. It's you keep the phone. You don't trade the phone back for $100. That would be crazy. You keep the phone and you get $100 towards the new phone. Of course, you can sell your old phone. So already you're up a significant amount towards an M10 or whatever's next.
So if you buy a million phones, you can sell them and get $100 for each and get rich.
Well, people are saying that a rival manufacturer could buy like 10 million M9s and take advantage of this and bankrupt HTC. I'm sure there's some kind of legalese in there that would prevent that. But yeah, it's nice. They've got to have done the maths and worked out that for the number of people that break their phones, the number of people that will redeem this offer, it makes sense for them. And it's a short-term publicity boost for the M9 for people who are worried about this kind of thing, and it is a big worry for a lot of people who are buying new phones.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about, I've heard people say, well, that goes to show they don't, think too much about their product. They think you're going to break it or it's not going to be able to handle a drop. Well,
bull crap. They think very highly of it if they're willing to back up the few people that drop it and break it. I'll get unupset. I'll just go back in my corner and sulk. But that's crazy talk.
I don't think I disagree with you there.
I mean, if I was going to sell you something that I knew was going to break, there's no way I'd tell you, hey, I'll fix it for free if you break it.
Yeah.
Jerry would never sell you anything if he knew it would break it.
No, I wouldn't. My outrage would kick in, and I'd say, let's go find who made this and why does it break, and then let's have a beer.
Fair enough. I think it's a really cool thing. I really do. Our friend J.R. Raphael mentioned that as well, that Motorola kind of did something like this before. Yep. But yeah, really cool to see. So hopefully I never have to use it.
Anytime one of these manufacturers makes it seem like they care about us,
I know.
I love it.
It's just a shame. I mean, we have to point this out every time. It is US only. As much as HTC is a global company, you have different divisions, and they all kind of do their own thing to a certain extent. It would be nice if this was global, but you can see why, for logistical reasons, it isn't, at least not yet.
And he did kind of leave the door open to expanding it. And maybe it's legal reasons as well. I can't quite tell if that's part of it, but you said, yeah, you know, we'll take a look and we'd love to expand it and we'll see. Hopefully they do. I hated seeing just all the hate about that. It's not like it was my fault that it's US only. But
no, but at the same time, you know, HTC's announcing this, they've got to know it, the way the internet works. It's all global now.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be, your audience isn't just people who live in the US, right?
Right.
So
America.
I did want to briefly talk about all this 810 stuff that's been going on, Snapdragon 810 stuff. I can't say everything, but you can ask me questions, or I can ask you questions.
Have you burned yourself to death yet?
Jerry got it out before I did.
If you haven't seen it, there have been single stories out there showing pictures of infrared, you know, pictures of phones, and lo and behold, the metal phone is radiating more heat than the plastic ones, which I thought was obvious.
Well, the good news is that while it burns you to death, you won't get cancer.
Yes.
Gosh.
So wrong. Here's what's going to happen in the next week. You're going to hear a lot of talk about throttling. You're going to hear a lot of talk about thermals. And let me see if I've got the basic science of this right. And actually, if you go back and read some of Shinee's futurology posts that we did earlier this year, androidcentral.com/futurology, hotter electronic anything is worse, generally speaking, right? It's not going to run as well. It's not going to run as fast. It's not going to last as long.
Exactly.
Yeah, and especially when you're dealing with batteries, you know, stuff that is, the chemistry is delicate to that kind of stuff as well.
Okay, so to avoid that sort of, we call them thermals, to avoid the thermals, manufacturers will say, all right, we don't want this device to run any faster than this because we know it's going to get that hot when that happens, so we're just going to cut it off then, and that's throttling.
Same thing your computer has done for the last 10 years.
And here's my question, is throttling in and of itself, on principle, a bad thing?
No, without it, your stuff would be burned up in a week.
Yeah, you have that's to. How this technology works.
Right, you have to place some sort of governor on the top limit. You can't just go as fast as you can, see how fast you can get there, and just keep going until it burns up, because it'll burn up.
My little Honda Civic has 8,000 RPMs on the tach. So should I not run it that high all the time?
Well, chances are your Honda Civic is designed to run just fine at 12,000 RPMs. That's why they said it's okay to run it at 8.
Jerry meant 1,200, but that's okay.
Right, right. Yes.
That's the point. I'm honestly not even going to make that point. I'm going to tell you my experiences. I'll tell you that right now. I don't take temperatures. There's a joke in there somewhere, but I'm not going there either.
Thermometer.
Poor Alex. I love it when Alex makes just enough noise for the camera to hit him when I say something like that. Oh, look at that face. Look at that. You guys not watching the video are missing out here. I'm going to tell you my experiences, and I'm betting now I'm going to get a lot of people who won't believe what I'm going to say. Let me just leave it at that.
I mean, excessive throttling, like excessive anything on an electronic device, is bad. It's we've kind of seen, the problem is we've had the experience with G-Flex 2, which does throttle very excessively, and you can see, you know, just run Antutu 3 times on it, and you can, like, the score goes down a lot more than you would expect. And people are kind of framing this in the same way with the M9 and thinking that it's a chip thing, not a software thing.
It's not a chip thing. If you think it's a chip thing, I can't wait for a case manufacturer to try and sell you a water cooling fancy one M9, because that's the next step.
I mean, we can demonstrate this. Anybody that wants to test this at your house, burn a Ubuntu ISO, give me a shot on Hangouts, and I'll tell you how to shut off the throttle governor on your CPU in your laptop. And you can test it yourself, what happens if you don't throttle things down.
That's a bad idea. Don't do that, Jerry. Take it back to your house.
What Alex hit on is excessive.
Right.
That's what we have to determine, is The G Flex 2, we say it's got excessive throttling. We don't know what would happen if it didn't throttle at that low speed and or temperature. This is one of those things that it's going to be different from every phone. I guarantee the M9 is going to be very different acting than the G Flex 2, even with the same chip. Design and heat dissipation and software has a lot to do with it.
People are going to say, well, but it doesn't benchmark as high, or I don't know how they knew what it benchmarked at before, but whatever. And, I mean, my answer to that's going to be, so what? What is it not doing that you want it to do?
And if the first thing that happens when you take a phone out of the box is you run benchmarking software on your phone 4 times in a row to see what happens, seek therapy.
I'm not saying don't run benchmarks, but if you let that stuff govern your experience with anything, I think you're going to miss out on something.
I think, yeah, we're talking about the G Flex before, and we want to get into why we were doing that. The problem with the G Flex was more than throttling, right? The problem was that it would be fast for a minute and then quite slow the next. It was an inconsistent performance that we were getting out of it, and it would seem like the benchmarks kind of showed why, right? That it would get to a certain point and it would then throttle very aggressively.
Was it an inconsistent performance or inconsistent experience?
Both.
If you were not running benchmarks, you know, and looking at, you know, not theoretical, but looking at relative numbers, would you have noticed that, you know, something just doesn't quite feel right?
Absolutely, 100% yes, because games did it as well on the G Flex.
Okay.
But we just have to be clear that that is not necessarily an indication of a bad processor.
No, it isn't. There's the processor, then there is the case that it's in, there's the, you know, the thermal properties of the board and the chassis and everything else, and the software governing it.
And these are variables that go into every single device you've ever used.
You know what I think the big problem here is we've had one company trash talk this particular processor. And no matter how many times the people who make it and other people who are using it and industry experts come up and say, well, that's not necessarily true, people are still going to remember that one very big company trash-talked this piece of, you know, equipment that goes in a phone and just don't want to let it go.
I don't care who's making this device. I don't care that it's HTC. I don't care if it was LG or Motorola. I'm telling you right now, what I'm going to write about this phone is my experience with it. And if you don't believe me, I don't know what to tell you. It's that simple. I can see the reaction already. I've spent too much time looking at the forums. And
we've never really differed from that approach in the way we review stuff, actually.
Look, honestly, I wasn't crazy about Alex putting benchmark numbers in the G Flex 2 story. I know why he did it, and I get it. But yeah, I think that's a crutch, and I think even if you tell me that that's data and data can't lie, I think it can. I think it can tell a story that is not necessarily representative of an experience.
Yeah, there's using data like that to back up what you're seeing in the experience, and using data to kind of tell a story that doesn't relate to the experience, or tell a story that just is irrelevant to the way normal people use the phone. And I think what we tried to do with the G Flex was to say, okay, here's what we're seeing in normal use, and here are benchmarks that kind of back that up.
And my favorite thing to remind everybody of, your processor, when it comes to how fast Android is performing, unless there's weird software problems like Alex found with the G Flex 2, doesn't matter, because your processor isn't even close to your biggest bottleneck when it comes to performance.
Yeah, I mean, let me show you
anything with encryption. If we learned anything with the encryption stuff that we did through the growth of Android 5.1, it is that the single greatest bottleneck in smartphones right now is the speed with which our storage moves. And until that improves, your processor really just doesn't matter at this point. I mean, it matters a little when you're doing like games and stuff, but the delta between, let's say, the Snapdragon 800 and the Snapdragon 810, completely irrelevant.
And we talk about processors. The use a Galaxy Nexus on Jelly Bean, and you know, the software is a big part of that as well, and optimizations and that kind of thing. The GNX is a very, very old phone now, but still, if you load 4.3 or whatever the latest build is on there, it still feels as fast as a lot of, you know, maybe less well-optimized current phones on Kcam Lollipop.
I'm looking through the Q&A to see if there's anything in there. Please tell me no.
I'll tell you anything.
Don't somebody put one in there.
How do I get a troll name and put a...
Joe says 810 is basically the last leg of the 800, so it's clocked at its peak, and HTC's all-metal design always gets hotter than any other phone. Well, I mean...
No. That's technically wrong. Sorry. It's using... the 805 is actually the last kind of leg of crate, which is what HTC's been using, what Qualcomm's been using going back a few years now. The 810 uses 64-bit ARM designs in there. They got A57 cores and A53 cores, and it's a completely new design that hasn't been in any Qualcomm chip before.
Right, and I don't think people quite understand how that works when you say ARM and Qualcomm and Samsung and TI. ARM invents this stuff, and they license out the blueprints for people like Qualcomm to use to make the processor. They can make little changes, but this is, Alex nails it. This is all new stuff, kids. This is nothing to do with your old stuff.
He was right in that metal radiates heat better than other things. It just does. That's science. Even I know that.
It's true.
Thank you. I appreciate you backing me up on that. Oh, man. Anyway, we'll talk. I didn't want to talk so much HTC today. I really didn't. But there's a lot going on, so be it. Anything else? Did I forget anything on that front?
I for one, can't wait to see what you think of the doggone thing. I could care less what a number is in a benchmark. I'm looking forward to seeing how it treated you.
Me too.
I was trying to be helpful and you ruined it.
I didn't ruin anything. Did I? I'm sorry.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll click off that last Q&A question. How about that? Galaxy S6, what's new there?
It doesn't burn you.
God, Terry.
It has a better...
Oh, so wrong.
It's, you know, that's, this is going to be a big turning point for Samsung. I really think this is going to define maybe not the Note 5, but after that, every single product they make, if this is successful with this new design and this new departure from things that they used to do, I see this as a big change. And I'm not going to say it's a good change or a bad change. Everybody wants SD cards and batteries they can take out and big monster hump extended batteries, whatever. But I think this is going to be pretty successful, and I think all future Samsung devices are going to follow suit.
Yeah, I think Jerry's probably right. My fear maybe for the Note 5 is... And we kind of touched on this a little bit before. The Note has always been the all singing, all dancing. Here is the fastest, most awesome Samsung device that they can release that does everything and has all the features. If they suddenly move to this new design where maybe it's kind of slippery and metal and glass and maybe a little bit more fragile than earlier Notes, then is that going to be as attractive to people who bought a Note 3 and Note 4? Are the people who maybe want the removable battery, the movable storage more than... a traditional sleek-looking smartphone. The Note has always been about having the best everything, the fastest everything, more than the design, arguably. So we'll have to wait and see what direction they go in there. I would almost hope that they took maybe the best of both worlds, the best of the Note 4, the best of the new design, and maybe had a little bit more metal, but was still with something removable somehow to sort of make up for that. And hopefully, even though we still don't know an awful lot about battery life in the S6, hopefully they step that up a little bit as well, because this is the power user's device, whereas the S6 is more the mainstream kind of thing.
Well, I think the biggest quick charging and wireless charging, I think, in Samsung's eyes, means you don't have to put such a huge battery in it anymore. And people can say, well, that's like Apple forcing you to do things a certain way. No. Samsung can make more money, make better devices by following this direction, and I think that's what they're going to decide to do, and we're going to have to adapt.
Maybe, but if I mean, the They do that. They leave the door open to someone else to right? You know, probably LG in this case, to say, okay, we're going to do removable everything and we're going to have bigger batteries because, hey, that's our differentiator now because Samsung isn't doing that anymore. And if you want to, they're the number two manufacturer, I think, now we would all agree. And if they want to fill that niche where you have power users who want removable batteries, removable storage, and wireless charging, and a removable back cover and all of the things, then that seems something they can step up and do relatively easily because they're already doing it.
Yep. I'm not saying that they're not, and that I'm not saying that this won't backfire. And this is me guessing. I can see Samsung's side. They save production costs and make what they think is a better product if they follow this path.
Sure. And, you know, no one's going to argue that the S6 doesn't look like an awesome phone.
Oh, my God.
Easily the nicest looking device I've designed.
That S6 Edge, I would put up with TouchWiz for days to be able to have that phone. It looks beautiful.
All right, I was going to ask, what's everybody want? And honestly, I'm still on the fence. I think I'm on the Edge side of things. But Jerry wants the Edge. Alex?
I've gone back and forth. I think I've kind of settled on the regular S6 just because... cost and also updates. The Note Edge is kind of lag behind on updates. So,
yeah, but that's, I mean, that's different. There's an Edge and then there's an Edge, right? What, Jerry?
The Edge has that neon kit thing where if you put it face down, it's like one of those Toyota Celicas you see in when the kids all get there in the parking lot.
Fast and the Furious Edge Edition.
Yes.
Wow.
I am impressed, and it takes a lot to impress me.
Apparently, all it takes is little flickering lights. Yeah.
I think this is one of the best looking and most innovative designs that I've ever seen in a smartphone.
It's so light. It's really light. Sorry, I was making a frowny face there. I didn't mean that to be like, it's light. But... it's really light. I'm excited about it. This is the first Samsung phone I've been excited about in a while. And I'm sorry, I wish I liked the Notes more. I really do, because the Note 4 is one hell of a phone.
Yep.
And I don't have a good explanation for that. It's just one of those irrational things. But this I'm really excited about. Do I have to have a rational explanation for that, given my job?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
There are other factors as well. The fact that they've... if you use a Note, even on Lollipop, and an S6 side-by-side, you can, even though the software looks similar, actually using it is night and day, because you can just tell how much better optimized it is on the S6. They've gone to great lengths to make it, you know, to get rid of the jank that you would associate with Samsung phones and TouchWiz. Now it's a lot smoother experience, just more enjoyable to use as a result, I think.
Cool. We're going long. Anything else in the Q&A you've seen? Jerry did a really cool article on wireless charging. We're going to do more on that as we're kind of leading up to the GS6. Not that the GS6 is the only wireless charging device out there, I get it. But this is something we've wanted to do for a while, so we figured now is a good time to do so. And Qi versus PowerMat, Jerry, what's the short version?
PowerMat is one company maintaining... well, it's essentially one company maintaining a standard. Qi is everybody else. I always will bet on everybody else versus one company. Look at Android versus Apple. You know, both are successful, but one is a billion successful.
Only one of those companies is run by Thorsten Hines.
Well, and I'm not knocking PowerMat. If people would build it into the phone, so you didn't have to use a big weird case, it would be just as effective and just as good as Qi charging. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I don't care about the technology. I don't particularly care about, you know, I care about who won. I care about what's available.
Yep. So you get past the surface tension of people that have Windows phones on AT&T and don't get to use Qi chargers and instead have PowerMat built in. They don't have any issues charging your phone. It works fine. It's just not compatible with everything else.
Thomas wants to know, are the concerns over Google's antitrust actions legitimate or overblown? Depends on who you ask, I guess. If you haven't seen it, the Wall Street Journal dug up some old stuff from, was it the FTC's initial investigation? Yeah. And had been sealed. Maybe it was unsealed, or did they just get it? I need to go back and read it again. But some really important stuff. It's worth a read if you haven't seen it yet. Yeah, I mean, There's don't be evil Google, and then there's regular corporation Google.
Yep.
And I think that's what you're seeing here. I think you're seeing regular corporation Google.
Any company the size of Google needs to have a lot of oversight at the things they do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad somebody is looking into every little thing they do, because Google is a company that's out to make money off of us.
There's a question there about Nintendo and Android.
Yes.
I'm going to take a swing at that real quick.
Have you talked about Nintendo and Android? Yes, we just did. Thank you. Good question.
Woo, we're done. Wait,
you had something.
So, yeah, Nintendo announced that they're going to work with a company to start doing some mobile stuff. A lot of nerds got really super excited because they thought that meant that some of Nintendo's back catalog was coming to Android. And a whole
I hear a butt coming. I hear a butt coming.
Slam on the brakes. This is new products, not old products. You are not getting Super Mario Bros. 3 on your Android device unless you do the exact same thing you're already doing, which I, of course, don't condone. But, yeah, so we'll see some new stuff. We will almost assuredly see some stuff with the new Pokemon games that are coming out and the Pokemon Bank stuff that they've been doing online. But as far as, like, you know, shiny new properties, you know, they haven't made any solid announcements. It's cool. I'm a big fan of Nintendo, and I have wanted to see Nintendo on my mobile device for longer than I have had a mobile device. So, you know, this is it's neat, but I am not even close to holding my breath for any, like, super cool stuff anytime soon.
Yeah, and Nintendo's not going to do anything that disincentivizes you from buying any of their standalone consoles, and that's where the whole back catalog thing comes in. You can't really compare that to what companies like Sega are doing, because Sega doesn't sell hardware anymore. So that's why you can buy not all the back catalog, but, you know, big chunks of their back catalog on Android now.
I just want to say, the whole time Russell was talking, I wanted to go do-do-do-do-do-do.
Oh my God. And with that, I think I'm going to stop it. Super Mario Jerry, I'm trying to think of a show title.
I'm going to learn to be quiet.
Here's my recipe for a show title when I can't think of anything else. It's just something something Jerry, or Jerry something something. It works. It just works.
I love you too, Phil.
Every now and then I use myself, but that seems a little something. I don't know.
I'm just glad I can help.
All right. as we are every week, we're brought to you by shopandroid.com. I see they're getting some M9 stuff in. I don't think we have any GS6 stuff for pre-order yet. Go take a look. I'm really curious to see how cases work with that edge, actually.
Don't
put a case on something that pretty.
I'm totally... Well,
no, so, it, like, all the cases that Samsung did, they hook onto the corners, and you, like, get nothing on the sides.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat looking, but it increases my cringe factor just a little bit that something terrible is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, having a case that covered... Would you want a case that covered the edges? That would be like having a case on normal phone that just covered part of the screen, wouldn't it?
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would. Anyway, shopandroid.com. Go buy stuff.
Wait, the company I work for sells cases, so yes, you want cases on your edge.
That's right. That is
you need
always...
three cases at once.
Yes. Get a case, put it in a pouch, then buy a Pelican case. I don't know, something. Oh, man. Trying to think what's coming up. So next week, nothing weird, right? We're still home for a little while. We should start seeing Google I.O. invitations going out relatively soon. We'll see who got in on the random drawing. That's awesome. If you haven't entered our Huawei contest, put a big fat link up at androidcentral.com/Huawei. You can't miss it. Go do that. We've got a week to do it. So if you're not listening to this until later in the week, awesome. It's going to run for 10 days, actually, until the 30th. I've got it going. So a lot of that. I think that's it. It's going to get crazy here pretty soon. Enjoy the respite.
Yeah, April's going to be busy.
Enjoy the respite.
I'm going to keep printing things.
Russell's going to keep printing things. So, all right. That is it, I think. We shall return next Friday with another live show. Thank you, everybody watching live. Thank you, everybody listening later. Thank you, Jerry, Alex, Russell. Andrew will be back next week, I hope.
Thank you.
Yay.
Thank you.
All right, see y'all later. This episode of the Android Central Podcast was brought to you by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/androidcentral.